of the House Special Committee on Energy to order. It is 8:03 a.m. this Monday, January 27th, 2014. And let the record note the following members are here: Representative Hughes, Representative Higgins, Representative Nagyak, Representative Josephson, and myself, Representative Isaacson, and my co-chair, Representative
Millett.
I want to say Charisse is excused. So let me also introduce others who are here. Folks, we're glad to have back with us House Record Secretary Deborah Tillinghast on the computer on my right, and teleconference operator Alex Judiche. And my committee staffer this year is a former Washington State Superior Court judge, wow, tribal judge, chairman of multiple entities. I'm honored to have her, Catherine Eldemar, as our Energy Committee aide. Also, Brenda Hewitt will be operating as my chief of staff. She'll be operating the slideshow this morning because our presenter is stuck in an airport. And then I want to introduce Jeff Turner, committee aide for Representative Charisse Millett, who is an invaluable member of this committee, and thank you also. So the purpose of today's meeting is going to be following a presentation of the activities that occurred with the Institute of the North this summer and fall. And I'm excited that Nils Andreessen is able to join us by phone, at least. But before we get to his presentation, I just want to draw your attention to a memo I put on your dais and copies up here, just talking about focus of energy. One of the things that I've noted, and you have too, I'm sure, over the interim, especially since the five of us here are new members to House Energy Committee, is there is a lot of interesting opportunities in this sector. So to be able to focus this year, I'm hoping that we will be able to look at what are those impediments to bringing the lowest delivered cost to Alaskans in every region. And affordability, meaning that it's got to be cheap enough to attract private investment, bring new jobs, and stabilize communities. So I'm working on some issues regarding this. I can't help but think of a quote of Steve Jobs as you look at these two tables and you see at least six separate overlapping functions within consumer energy, and then state agencies. There's at least 13 entities involved in this sector. There are a myriad of issues, hundreds of service providers and organizations that are working this field, and so a lot of interesting opportunities. And about that, Steve Jobs is quoted by Walter Isaacson as saying that focus requires saying no to a lot of interesting opportunities. We could hit every single aspect but get nothing done. So I'm hoping that, as you have expressed it to us, that we concentrate on moving forward the issues that will bring the lowest delivered cost to every region of Alaska and get our economy going. So with that, I'm going to, and that's by way of an introduction then, turn this over to Nils Andreessen, who is the Executive Director of the Institute of the North. Mr. Andreessen's presentation will provide an update to us about the 2013 Arctic Energy Summit in Akureyri, Iceland, and also the Alaska Dialogue on Energy, which was held in Seward, Alaska. And for the record, I participated in both of these very informative and constructive events. So at this time, Nils, thank you for joining us from the airport. I'm sorry to say that you have been boxed in by weather and mechanical issues. So we hope that after this presentation, you'll be able to safely arrive sometime in this day and then meet with our members one-on-one. And also, for the record, let it be noted, Representative Foster has joined us. Thank you. So at this time, Nils, go ahead, and Brenda will just tell her when to change the slides. Take it away.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. For the record, my name is Nils Andreessen, and I'm the Executive Director of apologize for not being able to join you in person today. And I will also apologize in advance if there are airport announcements that end up interrupting the presentation. But thanks for having me for this presentation. I'll do my best to move through these slides fairly quickly. You should have copies in front of you, and there's plenty of text on each slide that there's plenty of reading to do. So again, the Institute of the North is Alaska's Arctic think and do tank, and I'd like to do a quick review of a couple of events. As the co-chair mentioned, our Alaska Dialogue this last fall in Seward, and then our Arctic Energy Summit in Iceland. Next slide. For those of you who don't know, our mission is to inform public policy and cultivate an engaged citizenry consistent with our focus on the North and belief that commonly owned resources should be managed and developed for community and individual prosperity. And that last part is especially important when we're thinking about Alaska's domestic energy production, generation, transmission, and use. It's one of our core focal areas. Next slide. I want to mention just a little bit more about the Institute. You can see that our values, we think of the Arctic as a commons and the management of its resources to be the benefit of the people, and that's consistent with the state's constitution. We do focus on responsible energy and infrastructure development, believing that both of those facilitate sustainable communities. The goal in addressing energy and infrastructure development is healthy, prosperous, and resilient people and communities. And at the same time, we're able to and want to elevate the voices of Northern peoples at all levels. So the Institute is able to provide a feedback loop between local communities, state agencies, and national and international actors. Next slide. For those of you who aren't familiar with our work, you've probably attended one of the Institute of the North events over the course of the year. We convene and facilitate civic discourse, bringing people together from a diverse array of perspectives in the hopes that we're able to address some of the critical issues facing the state. And it's through that engagement that and active participation by those who attend our events that we're then able to inform public policy through outreach and education. All of anything that the Institute does results in a meaningful product, either tangible recommendations or findings that help move policy forward. At the same time, we're able to sustain a fairly broad network of stakeholders within the state, but also around the Arctic, and those include policymakers and technical experts. And throughout this process, we bring together research for broader awareness and accessibility. Next slide. I'm going to move back and forth in between the Arctic Energy Summit and the Alaska Dialogue because I think the two themes that we work to address at each are fairly similar. The themes at the Arctic Energy Summit had to do with richness, responsibility, and resilience. The theme at the Alaska Dialogue had to do with how the state makes and can make effective investment decisions when it comes to energy development. At the Energy Summit, we wanted to encourage everyone attending to think in terms of three levels of governance, national, indigenous, and subnational. And in each of the eight Arctic nations, these three levels of governance have an integral role in developing energy projects and in fostering sustainable communities.
Nils? Nils, let me interrupt you right there. We have a question. Representative Hughes?
Yes, and thank you. I actually was trying to ask you, thank you, Nils, for coming via audio to us today. And this question before you get into really the meat of your presentation, maybe the other people around the table know this, but I don't, and that is your funding. How is Institute of the North funded, and do you have a board of directors then? That's one thing I don't know about Institute of the North.
Sure. the chair. Thank you, Representative Hughes, for that question. I always forget to tell more about us. The Institute of the North, founded by Governor Hochul almost 20 years ago now, has an active board of directors. Our current chair is Drew Pierce, and it's a statewide board of 15 who meet regularly to set our agenda and goals. We have actually a diverse array of funding sources. Probably half of what we do is through the events that we host and companies and others sponsoring those, people paying to attend those. We have some grants, but it's really not a big part of our portfolio. We've had state support in the past. We've had federal contracts for various projects that we've engaged in. So our funding comes from a wide array of different sources.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nils. Continue.
So I think one of the things I wanted to mention about governance is, and this came out of the Arctic Energy Summit, was to encourage people to think beyond stakeholders to rightholders, that local communities, tribes, states, and nations have rights as well as responsibilities when it comes to developing energy and supporting communities. And there was a lot of pushback around the idea of stakeholders because stakeholders, a lot of people might have a stake or an interest in the issues that affect energy here in the state. But there are those who have specific rights and responsibilities, and we wanted to emphasize that. Next slide. And the top of this slide should reflect the first theme of responsibility. The three themes of responsibility, richness, and resilience really act as to provide some cohesion around the topics that were addressed at the Energy Summit. And the topics, range from actual project development of, tidal, wind, diesel, et cetera, to policy discussions about government subsidies, fiscal regime, infrastructure development. But the three themes, I wanted to run through these just to give you a sense of how we were thinking about these. It was clear, from those attending the Arctic Energy Summit that in all eight nations, the people there recognize that energy development is not risk-free, but that they have a common commitment to risk mitigation. One of the things that I like to say is that northern peoples are concerned but capable. They have a common commitment to ensuring sustainable communities. They understand that oil, gas, and other energy development comes with risk, but they're equally committed to working to avoid and mitigate risk as much as possible. A lot of that risk mitigation comes back to having the necessary response ability. That's the infrastructure in place for response operations in the pursuit of energy development. Finally, northern peoples recognize that they have a responsibility to community, to culture, to the environment, and that the development of indicators around their responsibility is a next step. Next slide.
One moment. We have a question, Representative Nagyak.
On our not risk-free but commitment to risk mitigation, there goes my Eskimo accent. I think traditional knowledge should be part of one of the aspects of risk mitigation, and also on community culture and environment. What's the development of the indicators? What are the indicators that you're discussing?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Nagyak, I think you bring up a good point that when it comes to risk mitigation, it's employing not only Western science but also local and traditional knowledge. That it's really it takes everyone in many different capacities to ensure a safe environment. I think that the development of indicators has to do with the next step for the summit, that each of the areas identified as states having a responsibility to, healthy communities, strong cultures, safe, healthy environment. that nations are working toward developing ways to measure how well they're doing in their responsibility to those. So it's really just the next step piece.
Thank you.
Yeah. Next slide to richness. This is really a starting point for Arctic states. Actually, almost all Arctic nations are similarly endowed with rich resources, and it's a common talking point that we're rich in resources, rich in supply. And we, at the Energy Summit, kind of thought of richness in terms of three areas: the non-renewable resource, the renewable resources, but also efficiency and conservation. That each of these play an integral role in thinking about richness. At the same time, we have rich environments and we have rich social and cultural structures. Next slide.
One question, Representative Nygaard.
On the efficiency conservation side, you're talking mainly about retrofitting existing structures and or the power plants and all that other stuff that are within the realm of our discussion.
Through the chair, Representative Nygaard. No, that's a great question. I think yes, exactly. That's what efficiency is talking about. It's talking about the design of a more efficient building, both public buildings as well as private homes. It's talking about demand management and how people use energy and how they think of energy and how they work together to reduce energy usage, which is really money in the bank. And then also how, we as a state work together to have and engineer more efficient solutions.
And Mr. Andreessen, one of the things we might mention also is the way that these issues were defined essentially was essentially a consensus approach by many participants in both of these events. And so what you're stating is more of a summary of in this case, Acquetti, and not necessarily just something of the Institute. Is that correct?
Right. That's a great point, Mr. Kocher. We had 200 attendees in Iceland, and how I'm talking about this, comes directly from how the people in Iceland discussed it. So it really was it was very interactive, focused on dialogue between participants. And at the end of the session, they brought forward these key issues as having consensus behind them. So it's actually a fairly powerful statement when 200 people from 8 countries can come together and define and describe these aspects as having them in common.
Thank you. Go ahead and continue.
Next slide. So one of the things that came out at the end of the Energy Summit, we've gone into it with three themes of richness and responsibility and resilience. And really what emerged was an equation that we know we have wealth, so richness plus responsibility equals resilience, is how the group really thought of it toward the end. And resilience is the ability to respond and adapt to change. It's the ability of a system's capacity to bounce back. And if we are responsible in our resource development, if we recognize our responsibility to peoples and communities, they are that much more able to adapt to change. resilience is asset dependent, so it depends on the assets that we have in the ground and in our system, but it also is impacted by the scale and the rate of change. So change could come in a single event or it could come over many decades, but having the right assets in place and managing appropriately responsibly, the wealth that we have really affects how our systems can be more resilient. Resilience is time sensitive. If we wait to be responsible, then we're that less likely to be resilient. It was important to note that resilient communities depend on resilient energy systems. And by resilient energy systems, I think that we can think of it, you know, thinking back to the richness diagram, a resilient energy system takes advantage of renewables, non-renewables, and efficiency and conservation measures. Next slide. I want to bring this back to Alaska because, you know, talking about eight nations and their common issues is one thing, but it's really important to think about why we're having those conversations. And for us, you know, we understand that we have fundamental challenges facing the state. And I know that you do as well, that the state faces declining oil production, decreased state revenue, high energy costs in most of Alaska, and significant fiscal hurdles into the next decade. So the reason we're having conversations in Iceland and with other northern partners is the search for best practices, to look at new and innovative policies and systems that have derived maximum benefit from their resources for their people. Probably many of you are familiar with our more recent trips to Norway and Iceland, the Norway policy tour and the Iceland policy tour. And I want to mention just a few lessons from those that stand out. From Norway, we heard a lot about the nation taking an equity interest in projects developed. So that idea of equity investment was really important in Norway. Norway's approach to energy development is fairly straightforward. They export their non-renewables, they export their oil and gas, and they save all the renewable energy for domestic use. And that's Norway's owner-state model. In Iceland, the state takes a similar investment strategy when it comes to infrastructure and owns the transmission of energy around the state and provides a base rate for its people. I think most important about Iceland, probably you've heard about renewable energy resources, I think even more important is the affordability that Iceland has brought to its people. It has focused on, when it comes to affordability, providing 8-cent, 9-cent kilowatt-hour power to individuals and to some of its large energy-intensive projects like the aluminum smelting. We're talking about 2 or 3 cent kilowatt-hour power. And that's hugely significant for that society. I mean, they just went through a major economic meltdown, and they were able to bounce back relatively quickly because they had low-cost energy. And it really provided a great stepping-off point for their people.
And Nils, at that point, if you would elaborate a little bit, you were saying that they were charging for the energy cost to the industry much less than what they charged for the people, and yet both in our sphere of pricing is less expensive than what we're paying. So you said 2 to 4 cents to industry and about 8 to 10 cents for residents. Why was the trade-off important? Would you elaborate on that a little bit more, how many jobs were created and the significant impact?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Okay. That's a good point. I think that Iceland, you know, one of its major focuses has been to attract industry to the nation. You know, it's one of its competitive advantages is having low-cost renewable energy. And so they can attract energy-intensive industries from China, from Brazil, from around the world to come and set up manufacturing plants in Iceland based on the rate that they can charge. It's more affordable for them to smelt aluminum in Iceland that comes up from Brazil because of that energy. And what we've seen and what we heard in Iceland is that local communities, because of that, those anchor tenants, those energy-intensive industries that became anchor tenants for a region, the communities nearby, that project reversed unemployment that was quickly rising, reversed that trend, has meant new schools, new infrastructure. The mayors from the local region were just so enthusiastic about the opportunity and the jobs that those projects have brought. So for Iceland, being able to prioritize big projects based on low-cost energy has really been turned a lot of its regions around, and it's taken a very strategic approach, focusing on one region, developing its economy, and then moving on to the next. And they have a 10-year process to develop a plan for projects that they'll prioritize and develop into the future.
So just to follow up, two takeaways from that. Number one, reiterating the idea that this wasn't just overnight, it was a decades-long process that they got everybody to buy in, including those that were detractors from the ideas. So everyone agreed how to prioritize and move forward. And then the second thing you mentioned is a model for Alaska, perhaps, in our extractive industries. Instead of shipping all of our resources, our copper, for example, from the Nana region, Red Dog, instead of shipping it overseas, perhaps we should look at ways of having overseas ship it to us, and we could refine and do some value-added manufacturing. You said that in Iceland, which is at in the Arctic, Brazil was sending it, among others, and I think Australia and others, from the very opposite end of the globe, they were bringing it up to Iceland for processing of that minerals. I heard you right?
Right. I think, Mr. Kocher, that there's just huge power in low-cost energy, and that I think that they focus on their competitive advantage. Yes, they have a good location with a huge market in Europe and North America, and they sit between those, but most important has been their ability to deliver low-cost energy.
Thank you. Go ahead and continue.
So next slide. Just thinking more about Alaska, and I don't want to go into these numbers too much, but we know that we have high energy costs, that energy costs vary. Next slide. So when it comes to energy costs compared to the U.S. average, Alaska just can't compete. And I think if we think about it in terms of Alaska's competitiveness, and we think of low-cost energy as part of that competitiveness equation, we can really turn things around. I think because our mindset previously, and for a long time, I think, has been just how do we manage that high cost? And we haven't set new goals for actually changing things to be more competitive. Next slide. And the challenge, of course, is that the plan right now, and if we look into the next 10 years, we have a huge financial crisis, a fiscal crisis, perhaps, that we're operating in a new era of fiscal constraints, possibly, and that for as much as there is huge need when it comes to addressing energy infrastructure and energy development, and driving costs down, we have decreasing ability to do so as a state based on budget. Next slide. So I want to move into talking more about the outcomes from the Alaska Dialogue. And the Alaska Dialogue, we brought 75 leaders from around the state together in Seward for 3 days and ran them through some fairly arduous facilitations. And so what I'll present now is the results from that facilitation. And everything that you'll see came directly from participants, fairly broad consensus around this is what was important for people. And we approached this in a couple of different ways. One, we took some time and looked at challenges that are facing the state. We looked at some case studies to look to develop what's been successful in the state and around the world for policy development. And then we developed criteria based on that analysis and further went into developing some indicators for how do we measure success when it comes to policy. So I'll describe that in these next few slides. When it comes to challenges, we broke out challenges into production, generation, distribution, and utilization. And production being, getting something from the ground or air or wind, generating being generation of power, distribution, bringing the power from generation to the consumer, and utilization, determining how the consumer is using that power. So for production, next slide. I'm not going to read through this long list, but you can see that some huge challenges when it comes to production, from access to permitting, to changing market conditions, to lack of to the infrastructure deficit, huge differences between rail belt and rural infrastructure when it comes to production, common themes of balkanized systems, of lack of capacity, of regulatory uncertainty, and the need for affordable power just to produce energy. So I think that set the stage, and we talked a little bit about solutions, but I don't want to get too much into what solutions were offered, because we didn't spend enough time really on that. But you could see in solutions, more integrated operations management, looking into microgrids in rural Alaska, and then partnering with extractive industries for rural energy solutions. Next slide. When it comes to generation, some of the same challenges. You've got insecurity when it comes to supply. You've got huge challenges of cost and logistics that need innovation, that need regional planning. We've got economies of scale issues when it comes to generation, and so on. Next slide.
One second, Nils. We have a question. Representative Nagyot.
I'm on the production side. Previous slide that you're talking about, that I just wanted to ask a question about the some of the solutions made to that you have presented during your presentation, and so all this have been discussed, but the cost related to that would be one of the things that I think we need to discuss, because every time we start thinking about doing something in other areas, other state, we're always talking about the high cost of doing business within those areas, and it comes to mind that in the existing field right now in Prudhoe Bay, I know they produce fuel for their vehicles and all that, and then they have a company right there in Prudhoe Bay who sells a refined product right there in Prudhoe, and then that I know that for a fact that they do also sell it to the villages, and then in the wintertime they roller gun it to some of those communities. And so I was wondering why, or maybe one of the things that we just started discussing is, because of there are other fields within, especially in my area, where there is oil and gas, but it's not producible because of the there's no way to get it to market. But in the meantime, I mean, if Poudre Bay can have a system where they produce some, or where they have a well, why can't we maybe subsidize or work with the owners of that oil and gas within those? I'm talking about native land corporations and all that stuff.
And if I could inject, I think that's where the Interior Energy Plan really comes into play, because that's where ADA has just approved MWH to build a liquefaction plant so that we can move natural gas, LNG, off the slope. If it can get to Fairbanks, I'm sure it can get to the native communities.
I'm talking about, I know about the natural gas, where, you know, we've had the discussions, but, you know, overall and in rural Alaska, most of the fuel is diesel and all that, you know, and then there's some motor fuel and all that. I think it would transportation cost for those products because we have to, you know, we have a well, oil fields right 150 miles from where I live, but then that oil and gas is piped down to all the length of Alaska and then shipped out and come back to a refined product with a high cost because of the transportation.
Right.
And so why, if we look within those. Within those areas where there's oil and gas, why can't we work with those landowners and the people to build a small one like we're going to do with natural gas in Poudre Bay? Why, maybe we should have a study to do like something like that in terms of the refined fuel for heating and for transportation.
All right. So in terms of this report that Nils Andreessen is making, or any other of the studies that the Institute of the North has made, Nils, go ahead and if you'd like to address that.
Through the Chair, Representative Bagyak, I think what you bring up are some great examples of anchor tenants. Who are able to create an economy of scale and work with local communities using what they have to leverage the resource on behalf of nearby communities. I think it's those kinds of things that we need to, that the state needs to look at as it plans for the future. I think it's evaluating where are those opportunities for anchor tenants for extractive industries, where the state's return on investment could mean that they are able to support greater economy of scale in the region. So I think it's a great example. Thank you for that.
One further question, Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Representative Isaacson. Nils, the four challenge areas, production, generation, distribution, transmission, utilization, and then on the production slide, you had a solution set, and you're going to go through each of these challenges because I peeked ahead at the slides. A very general request is that as you go through these things and you talk about the solutions, can you please let us know what you think specifically the state should be doing? Because some of these things might follow the state, some of them might not. And as legislators, I'd really like to hear specifically something you think that if the state would step up and do a certain thing, it would make the difference. This is a lot of material, and so I just request that as you go through the rest of your presentation that you weave that in, please.
Right.
One more, Representative Higgins.
More of a comment than anything, Chair. Representative Nagyak, me and you and most of us here might have grew up in Alaska, And so when I hear people say, well, we need to spend money on a study to put a road to barrel, no, we don't need to put money on it. We just need to do it. I mean, how many times have we been here? We know what the state needs to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know the state needs to invest in ourselves. We know we need to build infrastructure. So it's great. You got a lot of bullet points here, but mm-hmm. a lot of us are tired of rhetoric. A lot of us are tired of studies, mm-hmm. and now we want to see specifics, and we want to see kind of something from your organization coming out to the governor saying we need to put money into building infrastructure. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know this.
Well, and I think that's comment. And that's a good comment. I think that's the intent of this presentation is to let you know that there is a synergy going on, not just within the state, but also within the Arctic area to do just that. But how do we prioritize? It goes back to Representative Nagyak's first part of his comment was the prioritization of these expenditures to get to proximity and so forth. Representative Nagy.
Well, at the same time, I mean, we're working within an institution that the federal government and in some cases the state, you know, with outrageous permitting requirements for several different agencies within their agencies that have several different permitting requirements within and in the state. And I mean, you know, every time we start discussing these projects and everything, we all start talking about the permitting requirements and why it is so long and so frustrating, because you have to require so many permits for the same kind of things that in other parts of the nation, you know, requires just a few.
Right. So, Nils, you hit on a really good topic, evidently, and I encourage us as a committee, let us create the prioritization this session to help guide our legislative process, and let's set this in motion as a bill action or a resolution or something that we take to the greater body. But this is definitely what you're on speaking about, Nelson, so thanks for hitting a hot button. Go ahead and continue.
Yeah. Thank you all for your comments. And I think, you know, one thing to recognize is that these challenges, you know, this was just some general brainstorming among the group in the room. And I think, Representative Higgins, you're right that a lot of people recognize what the challenges are. A lot of people have opinions about what the solutions might be. I'm going to move quickly through these next challenges without highlighting too much about the solutions, because I think where we want to focus is on how do we do that prioritization. So next slide, the generation slide. I ran through this a little bit, and I don't want to talk too much more about it. I think the in terms of solutions, I think one of the things that are already occurring are regional planning through AEA. So I would say that in terms of, you know, priorities, one of the things might be to support that regional planning process. Let me move on a little bit further. Next slide. Distribution and transmission, some of the same challenges as generation and production, and I think you can see here a lot of opportunities for the state and others to address things. I think the key solution here would be to, and the first one in thinking about anchor tenants and key infrastructure investments that might be made, and in working with the private sector and something like public-private partnership that create some economies of scale within our regions and communities. Moving on to utilization, I think there's a lot of work right now going on within the state for energy efficiency and weatherization and conservation efforts. I think AEA and others are doing some really, really good work on utilization. But there's plenty more to do, and a lot of it depends at some point on leadership from the state in terms of strong infrastructure. But I think we've got good programs in this area. Really, the bulk
one moment, Can I interrupt you on that part, Nils? Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nils, it's Andy Josephson. On the previous slide, could you explain the no renewable land use designation?
Thanks.
Yeah. And also, most of these acronyms I can either identify, but the STWD basis, I don't know what that is. But I'm curious what you're getting at by the no renewable land use designation.
Through the chair, I am going to have to come back with a good answer for that.
And the STWD is a statewide basis, I believe, is what you're...
I think that's right, yeah. Again, some of these, you know, they came from the working groups at the dialogue, and I've got familiarity with most of them, but I'd have to talk to somebody who was in that group to see what that means exactly.
All right, we'll have a follow-up on that one later. Representative Nagia.
I also agree with my colleague sitting next to me. And I would like to know more because I think this is one of the problems that we have in other parts of the state because the land is owned by the federal government and they I want to know what these things are because whenever you want to try and do something in federal lands. Those we didn't even know they existed in my part of the world without our knowledge. So I just want to make sure that, that we know what's going on in these federal lands, what we can and can't do. And so it really irks me when, we're trying to do something within this federal lands, but we are told, by the agencies, they're usurping the power of the federal government, the Congress, on both sides, on both houses. When they can unilaterally set parameters on what you can and can't do in state or federal lands, when it is the purview of the legislative body to do those things, it is every time we want to do something, it's an agency that's telling us we can't do that when it's not within their, they're usurping the power of the legislative body when they are saying you can't do this. You can't say that.
So, for purposes of this presentation, that's a great point. But let me encourage in this legislative session, let us define those particular things that need to be addressed by the legislature through the committee, and that way we can resolve it. Because if we just use the grand idea of it, we all agree. But let's give our colleagues and the state administration the ability to know exactly where we need to tweak this process to move affordable energy to our people.
Well, I think this kind of presentations. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Nope. This kind of presentations from people who in the know who have been doing this most of their lives is, and when these ideas come from them, or not ideas, but those problems are part and parcel of the process that we go through, and some of the ideas are part and parcel some of the problems that we face with within the system that we operate under.
Right.
And unfortunately, most of the land owned within the state is owned by federal government. That's what my frustration is when we want to do something within our areas, the federal government agencies, not the legislative bodies, place some great restrictions on what we can do within the state.
Right.
And then I think it is within our responsibility and our power to write resolutions or whatever to let them put them on notice that these are some of the things we need to do, but we have so many problems within the system of the federal government we can't do as a state.
This goes back to the opening memo that I gave to you, and I'll give Nils a chance, but folks, I need to remind the committee that this is a report.
Yeah.
and that this is a good report because it's helping to focus what we might do as a committee to move forward this session. Representative Hughes, and then I'll give it to Mr. Andreessen to
comment. And I'll try to be brief, but I'm going to bring it. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nils, I don't know if you'll get us to this point or if we need to schedule something later, but I, like Representative Josephson, was intrigued by seeing the solutions, but we didn't really go through and talk about those. And you kind of said we needed to get to a point where we're going to be prioritizing things, but I think as an energy committee, we need to understand some of these solutions. And I was intrigued also by the fact that the Institute of the North is not just a think tank, but it's a think and do tank. And we can be part of that and do here in the legislative body. So at some point, Mr. Chair, if we can be educated more on these solutions, I don't know how we can prioritize when we don't understand some of the solutions and the costs and which ones are appropriate for the state to take on.
And stay at that utilization. Just one comment and then give it back to Nils. So we'll have the RCA coming on Friday as an informal information exchange, not as an actual committee meeting, but that's one of the things we need to dig into, as well as transmission study. AEA will be here several times to talk to us on some of these solutions that are in the process. So we'll keep that in mind. And then, Nils, if you would take note of this and help us from the Institute of the North perspective and these different the report that you're giving us, the view of the solutions that you might be able to suggest to us, I'd appreciate it. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. To the chair, I guess to the entire committee, I really appreciate your question. Representative Josephson, I'll be sure to get you an answer on renewable land use designation, and I think that builds into Representative Magyar's comments as well. Representative Hughes, great point about solutions. The reason I'm not getting more into the solutions is because we didn't develop these further at the dialogue. What I would be happy to do is put together a short list of the solutions that were suggested and work with the committee and the committee staff to see who might be best, most appropriate to speak to them. It sounds like you already have some great speakers lined up.
That'd be excellent.
But yeah, we can help with that. So move on to the next slide, should be the 2010 plan. And, you know, talk very, very broadly for the rest of, mostly the rest of the presentation about state policy and strategy. These four bullet points came from the effort to put in place a state energy policy back in 2010. The plan then was to develop an energy policy, establish an energy policy, develop strategic goals, adopt a plan to achieve the goals, and implement programs and projects consistent with the goals. And my sense is, and what I think we heard at the dialogue, is that we did the one, and we haven't necessarily, as a state, done two through four. And that ends up being our current problem statement, is that how do we, this question of how do we move beyond the policy to actually achieving the things that we want to see happen. And for Alaska, maybe that's, you know, to what extent is the state achieving affordability, ensuring projects are efficient and effective, and we have stable funding for projects in the long term while we're practicing fiscal constraints. Next slide. We do have a state energy policy. These are, you know, some of the opening statements to that policy, fairly broad goals, recognizing how important this issue is, recognizing that there's a lot of factors outside of our control that affect the affordability and projects when it comes to energy, and that we've got huge challenges within the state in terms of distance and geography. But we have, next slide, we have at least set ourselves some good goals that, you know, we know where we're at when it comes to electricity. We know where we want to go, and the figure on the right is pulled from AEA, and we do have a goal of 50% renewable and 50% everything else. But I think the challenge lays ahead of us in moving beyond some of those goals to figuring out how we're going to do them. Next slide. This is just a policy sweet spot. One of the attendees of the dialogue gave us this example that the place we want to be in developing next steps for the policy is making sure that we're not doing anything that's, or not putting in place anything that's too complex or simple. And we want to be somewhere in the middle. And next slide. What we did at the dialogue is go through 8 case studies to look at what are elements of that policy sweet spot. And, you know, reviewed policy, implementation, and program. So next slide, the case study analysis on policy, you know, brought a number of areas that were very effective and of other successful policies around the world. And those policies ensured certainty. They empowered the market and allowed open access and allowed market forces to work. They had clear visions and missions. And, sorry, that lightboarding. A number of other areas that were really important for the policy. Next slide. Under implementation, clear sense that from the project we reviewed that infrastructure was crucial, that building for industry first and the rest will follow work in other places, that a great infrastructure, a microgrid infrastructure, is equally important. That's the way to deliver benefits to people. The case study analysis, you know, really, a lot of the case studies pointed to some really strong consensus among people. And I mentioned the Iceland process of, you know, a 10-year energy prioritization process. Canada's done similar efforts bringing its Aboriginal groups together with labor, with the territorial government, and federal government, and putting in place a pretty effective project assessment board that allows projects to move forward in 2 to 3 months. And that's the same. That's what we found in Iceland and Norway, too, some very effective processes for allowing projects to move forward. Finally, next slide, the case study analysis on programs and projects talked about that they were very inclusive, that they had a lot of involvement both from the public and private sector. They were statewide. They depended on the right information, and they had good technical credibility. Finally, the projects that we reviewed ended up being catalysts and foundations for bigger efforts. So I'm just describing the process that we went through at the dialogue to arrive at the next slide. 7 qualities of policy, and a slide following a description of what policy should achieve. And I think, you know, we can extract from these qualities of policy and what policy should achieve some good direction for strategy and going forward. An energy policy for the state of Alaska and a strategy and implementation plan should be driven by vision and strategy. It should create support regulatory clarity, which is something we heard is lacking right now in our challenges. It should have broad stakeholder buy-in, bringing in as many different groups as possible and making sure that there's good consensus in moving a project forward. Projects should be able to be evaluated against measurable indicators, and measuring success is a key part of addressing some of the challenges in front of us. Based on that evaluation, policy should allow and drive adaptation, evolution, to make sure that we're being responsive to what's working and what's not. Policy should establish a loading order or a prioritization method, which I think is something that sounds like is important for this committee. And a policy should include clear strategy or work plan for implementation. And I would ask this committee, I think, to reflect on the current energy policy and think about whether these are met. And I think the work in front of us is to make sure that they are, and that by doing so, we'll be able to get to what policy achieves. The next slide. And here's a long list of the things that are important to the people in the room at the Alaska Dialogue, but also to many other Alaskans: economic development, growth, sustainability, stability, equity, innovation and entrepreneurism, affordability, and so on. So I think that it sounds like that's the work that this committee wants to be doing this session, that there's an established policy that needs the next step taken, a strategy and an implementation plan. As part of that, next slide, the folks at the Alaska Dialogue developed a short list of indicators for how to measure whether we're having an impact, and so you can see those there. We've highlighted price as an indicator. When I think of the success of Iceland and other places, really dependent on affordability, and I think that's something we have to come back to again and again. And as part of that affordability, next slide, we have to understand the energy price for the policy sweet spot. And here's a fairly simple equation for energy price. And I think the one aspect of this that's not talked about enough is demand. And what we, when we talk about anchor tenants and economies of scale and return on investment, it's really about how do we structure energy projects and programs that are consistent with a community's or a region's demand.
Let me take this time to ask, how much time do you have before you have to board that plane?
I don't know.
All right. Well, just let us know when you have to cut off, and then we can always have you continue because this is excellent. But Rep. Hughes has a quick question.
Yes, thank you. In the 2010 plan, you noted that steps 2 through 4, the strategies and implementation is what's lacking, and that we have an established policy. But then in the last two slides, you had what the qualities of a good energy policy would be, what they should achieve. Do you feel like our energy policy that we have is good to go, or is it missing some of those things on those last two slides?
Through the chair, Representative Chu, that's a great question. I think that's really what I've been wrestling with and what Alaska Dialogue attendees were wrestling with. I think the work done to establish the current energy policy was some great work. I think a lot of effort went into it. I think what we hear from people at the Dialogue and others when it comes to whether this policy is doing what it should be doing, is it effective? Is it achieving what we wanted it to? I mean, I think the general sense is that no, it's not. On the slide after energy price for policy sweet spot, there's a key takeaway slide. And I tried to go through the two lists and think about whether the state energy policy meets the criteria. I do think that it's driven by vision and strategy. I think that the people who put it together were visionary and talk a lot about Alaska being a leader. I think that we need further development on strategy. I think if the group in the room at the Dialogue brought up regulatory uncertainty as a key challenge, then I can't say that the energy policy meets that criteria. Like, the energy policy was developed with great stakeholder buy-in, with meetings around the state, and very inclusive process, but is lacking in the ability to measure progress in evaluating success and in prioritizing project development. And on the other hand, has it achieved what we hope policy should achieve when it comes to energy? I do think that in some circumstances we've seen good economic development come out of the policy, that it has tried to achieve stability and predictability, And I think when it comes to equity, I think that's one of the things that the AEA process has been most important to them in assessing what communities have and not determining ahead of time what they should use, but leaving that up to communities. I think that's been fair. But I think there are other aspects that we're still challenged by and need to address. So to answer your question, Representative Hughes and for the committee, I think we've got a lot of good work in the current state energy policy. I think, you know, instead of reevaluating the policy itself, I think taking a look at what a strategy and a strategic plan for moving forward looks like that addresses these other questions. And I think, you know, a strategy and implementation plan can get to these other aspects.
Thank you. Go ahead and continue.
Yeah, so I'm just going to jump through these last few slides. So the remaining question is kind of what we're talking about. Is the current state energy policy aspirational or directional? And I think for most people, it's aspirational. It's good, lofty goals, a good future state, but it doesn't give enough direction for enough people. I think that for AEA, next slide, they have a very clear sense that it is directional, that the current energy policy determines how they should be approaching projects. Next slide. And they've started to do some work into communicating, you know, the great amount of work that the state's doing, both through AEA and other state agencies. I think the challenge is that AEA is only one agency, and the policy should be affecting everything, every level of decision making. And I don't know that we've got that yet. And to what extent does the state energy policy determine the executive branch's decision? To what extent does the state energy policy determine legislative capital projects or spending? I think those are kind of the questions that a strategy or implementation plan might address. Next slide is roadmap. And I would just maybe leave this with you that, you know, we need to have effective criteria to be able to decide and judge whether what we're doing is effective. So we need to know how to prioritize and rank how we spend limited money in a way that produces results. And we need a system for managing that process, both the projects and the expenditures, to make sure that we're accomplishing the goals set out by the policy. And there's nothing in place right now that's doing that, that's doing any of those three things. And it's a huge gap. When we're trying to talk about the solutions and evaluate the solutions, I think it was said earlier, and there's plenty of great ideas, there's plenty of, you know, we know what to do, but there's no way to choose between knowing what we need to do, and that's the next step. I think I'll leave it at that. I have some potential recommendations in the next slide. You know, maybe there's some legislative oversight that needs to occur. I think doing an evaluation of assets and liabilities might be interesting. And I don't know that we need more studies, but we do need some work to determine the strategy and implementation aspects of this. With that, I think I'll be done.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate your presentation. Nels, any last questions before he boards the plane? He will be here, hopefully, then, within a couple hours.
He'll be here all week.
And he'll be here all week. Excellent. So, again, thank you, Nels, for that presentation, and have a safe trip. For the committee, note that the next meetings, well, I should ask if there's any further discussion. We have a few more minutes if there's any further discussion on what he's been bringing forward to us. Mr. Fox, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I would like to just apologize for rushing through that. And I'd be happy to stop by everybody's offices, you know, this week and answer any other questions. So thanks for this opportunity.
You're welcome, and thank you for being a part of this presentation this morning, even though you are sitting in an airport waiting to get here. I appreciate technology and your use of it. Mr. Foster?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Niels, this doesn't require answering right now, but I know that you've been heavily involved in the Arctic, and we've talked a lot about the oil and gas reserves that are in the Arctic and companies going after those. We've talked about shipping and how the Northwest Passage and the Northern Sea Route will shorten those times. I haven't heard too much conversation about what role the Arctic will have in terms of bringing lower cost energy to Alaska, or how we can utilize that in terms of, you know, whether it's minerals being brought to Alaska, as was mentioned, so that they can possibly be refined. And so I'm just curious, as you move forward, if you can keep that question in mind in terms of how the Arctic can play a role in bringing our energy costs down, or how we can bring value-added industries to Alaska. With that, thank you.
Excellent. Mr. Higgins.
Well, this is more of a comment than anything. I thought we're going to move on to a little bit of a discussion before we leave. You know, one of the things I'd like to see, we've touched on a lot of subjects here, and, you know, we've talked about, you know, what can this committee do? And I'd rather like to see us do something than just do rhetoric this whole session.
Mm-hmm.
I really would. You know, we talked about, you know, getting federal lands designated back to state land like we were supposed to have a long time ago. You know, because we can't go anywhere until we settle that, you know. And then, you know, roads to resources is obviously important that we got to do. So, you know, some sort of resolution, something that this committee can put together that we can take to the governor would be great. Anyways, that's what I'd like to see. That's what I'm envisioning.
Very good point.
If I may make an addition to that, I think...
Yeah. Let me note you for the record, Representative Nagy.
I'm sorry. I just get so excited when I hear like-minded people. In addition to that, to some of the things that I discussed earlier, you know, in terms of creating industries within areas where, most of us have corporations, and most of our corporate lands are close to our to places of residence, and so in my town we have 25 miles away there's a known finding of oil and gas, but it's not feasible at this time. And so, you know, we talk about those things that when we have those areas, they're not feasible because of transportation and all those other things that, you know, that we always talk about. We want to make use of to export some of those things that we have in our land. But why don't we make it an incentive, with so many needs that we have, that you keep corporate lands, work with people within the corporate lands, and have them produce some of these things that we need, like oil and gas, making oil and gas or refined products in a smaller scale, so you know we can just distribute it within the coast of Alaska and along the riverine systems. And so I think we need to start thinking like that. Because there are ways to do things. Most of the land is in the state is, or most of Alaska in native land is divided into 12 regions. All 12 regions have corporations, and within those corporations, they have interests that they can't even do anything with. If we could find a way to, to encourage, developing within those, and to make sure that the state of Alaska needs are taken care of while we're waiting for all this other stuff that, you know, that would transport everything out of our state.
One of the things, if I could just comment to Mr. Nagyak's statement here, because we're having a good discussion on this, but take a look on the Royalty Oil and Gas Development Advisory Board. It's in statute. Some of the things that you've already talked about, what we need to do is, like Rep. Higgins said, is be directive and come up with what these this advisory board is to do. One of our problems is the Royalty Oil and Gas Advisory Board doesn't meet all that frequently, and when it does, it's pressed for time. So perhaps take a look at that, and we could look off channel after the committee. One of the things I'm working on, not as a committee bill, but definitely will be bringing around, is in order to stack priorities and evaluate them, building off of a Fairbanks Metropolitan Area Transportation System, or FMATS, mm-hmm. model, a technical side and an executive side of a under the umbrella of an energy commission, a consumer energy commission, which would help us get through the gridlock of a lot of these frustrations. FMATS, for example, is something I worked on as a mayor, and so I'm familiar with that, but it's a successful model built on a federal municipal planning organization model, and it is responsible for moving the gridlock of projects in the interior. Illinois Street, for example, was a 30-year gridlock. FMATS made it a priority, and now it's done. This is what we can do with energy as well. Follow up, Mr. Nagia.
I mean, one of the things we can do right away is to, one of the recommendations is to make this energy a standing committee. To make a standing committee, I think would be a start, because some of the things that we would be doing would be, I think, would have more weight if we were a standing committee. I think that, you know, instead of, you know,
all right,
that's one of the recommendations brought by Mr. Andres.
All right, Ms. Rep Hughes.
Thank you. Perhaps a bit of a closing thought, but echoing what Representative Higgins did mention in yours about being a directive. Of course, we want to do the wise and the right thing, but it makes me think here's some food for thought. I'd rather try to do something and fail than do nothing and succeed. So think about that.
Mm-hmm. So that's a great comment. Let's look at prioritizing our potential failures so that we can succeed, hopefully, on the biggest. Representative Foster.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
I like that. Prioritize our potential failures.
Well, only so that we can succeed in the biggest thing. Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr.
All right. Any further discussion? Well, let me remind that the next meetings of the Alaska Power Association is going to be here for Lunch and Learn this Wednesday, January 29th at noon in room 106, just down the hall here. And then on Friday, we'll have an informal roundtable discussion with the RCA, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. Chairman Patch will be here to engage us in an informal dialogue so that we can understand how the RCA impacts this discussion. And that's one of the missing keys that I've been fascinated by. We oftentimes hear of the frustration with the RCA, but what really does it do and how does it impact consumer energy? We think of it in pipelines and everything else, but it's a big player. So that'll be Friday at 8 a.m. in this room, room 124, on January 31st. All right. So if there's no other matters for the committee, then we stand at adjournment at 9:20.